Hello, my white brethren, and welcome to episode 198 of the 14 Words Podcast. This is the podcast where white people gather around and talk about things that matter to white people. Today, I have a treat for you. We have Monica Schaefer as a guest. She got in some legal trouble, I believe in Germany, for her political views, and instead of backing down, she stood her ground. So this brave lady has joined us today, and I'm definitely looking forward to talking to her. So let's dive right in. Hey, Monica, thank you so much for coming on the show today. I appreciate you.
Thank you for inviting me. I am very happy to be with you on your show today. Thank you, Texas Vet.
Yeah, I believe you had mentioned that you were already familiar with some of my content.
You know, I don't know if it was a couple of years ago, how long ago it was, but when you were interviewing some fine people, somebody must have sent me a link to one of those, and I watched, and I really liked it. Then I started watching more of your interviews.
Oh, that's
nice. Then I lost track a little bit, so I was delighted when we kind of met again here on X.
I saw you on Odyssey. You were in a group interview. There's like four or five of you on camera. Not too long ago.
Okay, yeah. No, that's right. I've been on quite a few interviews and this kind of thing. So, yeah, I'm happy to talk. Really, I am, because I think that the big thing is to wake people up. How have we gotten it to where we are now? It's with words. It's with lies and deceptions. So with words and speaking the truth, we can fight back, and at least at this stage. I mean, I know there is more work to do than that, but it is the beginning. It is the beginning of what we need to do in our struggle to basically take back our lives, take back our world, and, you know,
or at least our countries.
Yes, and and somehow, you know, we have to combat this enemy that wishes to kill us. So, yeah, this is a very, very important thing to do, is to get the truth out there and talk about it.
So there's a lot of people in our pro-white movement, or pro-white community, however you want to phrase it, that they're more focused on prepping or street activism and waving their swastikas or whatever their slogan may be. It doesn't, I mean, like Patriot Front doesn't do swastikas, and they're very pro-white. But I agree with you that it is the spoken word that will save our people. My concern is that it's going to take too long because of the oppression and censorship that we suffer, and I don't think we have that long. So I'm what a lot of people would refer to as an accelerationist. I'd want the party to get started while we still have a chance to win.
I like that. I really like that. And yes, action is needed. Absolutely. All of it is needed. So while you and your friends and, you know, patriots, or however you call yourselves, are doing some street activism, I am absolutely so supportive of that. I guess this movement needs all of us. Those of us who are perhaps, this is my role right now, I feel, in my life. It's what I can do, so I will do it, and that is to talk about what is going on. I can teach people a lot just through telling them about my experience. The fact that they don't want us talking about certain subjects, that should be huge red flag right there. And then we have to ask the question, why don't they want us talking about these things? Why do they object so strongly to a certain narrative being questioned, let alone, you know, if it's completely inverted and false? And in my case, that is the narrative of World War II and the so-called Holocaust, the so-called Jewish Holocaust, with the gas chambers and the shrunken heads and the soap and the lampshades and all those stories that we were fed all our lives. So that's the one that you just alluded to that I got into trouble with the law, that made a little video in 2016 called "Sorry, Mom, I Was Wrong About the Holocaust."
Yeah, that was a good video.
Do you want me to carry on with that?
Yeah, I like that video. If you have a link to it somewhere, you can put it in the you see at the very wait. There is no place to comment on this space. Well, you can send it to me in a DM, and I can put it in the Jumbotron up top. Otherwise, I will put a link to it in the description of the videos when I put it on my different social medias so they can watch the original video. You still have it, right?
Well, you know, it has been re-uploaded to so many platforms, so many sites. So if anybody listening right now, you could just put this title into the search bar, "Sorry, Mom, I Was Wrong About the Holocaust," or go to one of those specific platforms like BitChute or Rumble or wherever, and you will find it. It's, you know, they will never be able to get rid of it because it has literally been uploaded who knows how many times. And it's just 6 minutes long. So it won't take much of your life, you know, to watch that little video. And it went viral at the time. At the time, it was on YouTube. My brother, Alfred Schaefer, he lives in Germany. That's my brother. I live in Canada. We all grew up here in Canada. He kind of did a reverse migration. Like, our parents came from Germany, came to Canada, had a family here. And then Alfred, as an adult, went over there. And we're very close because we're the only ones in the family who started to wake up to the lies. And then he was already making some really good educational videos. He had good equipment. Then I went to visit him 2016, and he said, "Okay, Monica, get to work." So I did. I made this short little video, 6 minutes long. Like, who would have thought? And then it just took off. It went viral. Of course, his YouTube channel, that got taken down in 2019 when YouTube took down any, Nazi stuff or anything to do with truth about, you know, the Jews or the Holocaust or anything like that. So, but in the meantime, it was all over the place. So no fear, it is there. Yeah.
Yeah, I found it. I am making a post.
Good.
I'm making a post at the moment, and you will see it in the Jumbotron shortly. But so what was the trouble? How did you actually were locked up in Germany for a while, but then you were sent home for some reason?
I'll give you a snapshot of what happened. So 2016, went to visit Alfred, made that little video. Then I went back home to Jasper. That's where I lived for 37 years of my life, a little town in a national park called Jasper in the Canadian Rockies. And then I learned something that I never heard about before, but it's called ritual defamation. And I learned it not out of a textbook, but from a direct experience. I'll just say it's like the proverbial burning of the witch at the stake. Then a year and a half later, and it was December, and spontaneously I decided to go back to Germany to visit my brother. And perhaps, you know, it was my desire to just be able to relax amongst people who understand and know the truth and not be fired at every single day of my life in Jasper there. Like, I stood tall and proud, but it took a lot of energy. I can tell you, it took a lot of energy to just go out the door every single day and go downtown and smile at the folks, say hello, just like normal human being.
Because everybody in town, you were like notorious all of a sudden in your town?
Oh my goodness, it was an unbelievable story, because it's a small town. If I had been living in the city, it would be completely different, because I have friends who do very similar things, you know, calling out the Jews, you know, all kinds of things, and they live in a big city, and it's completely different for them, because their neighbors don't really know what they're up to. It's like, it's a big city. They just sort of disappear in the big city and live life normally. But I was living in a small town of approximately 5,000 people, 5,000 to 6,000 people maybe. and everybody knew me. I had been very active. I had worn many, many hats in that town in the decades that I was living there, you know, as an environmentalist, as a peace activist, as, and I was always trying to do things right, but I was in the wrong path many times because I was still living in the matrix, not understanding what's really going on around us until about 2011. But before that, I mean, please don't hold it against me. I was doing things like running in elections for the Watermelon Party. Oh, sorry, that's the Green Party. That's what they call themselves, but that really is the Communist Party. But I didn't know all that. I didn't understand all that. Their packaging is really good, and that's why I call them the Watermelon Party. They're green on the outside and completely red on the inside. So anyway, I had always been doing things. I was active. Also, I was active as a musician. I was not only teaching and playing for making my living with that, because I was playing at weddings and all kinds of VIP events out at the Fairmont Jasper Park Lodge. It's a really fancy place, you know. So I was
the violin, right?
As a musician, yes. But I also was volunteering my time with the violin all over the place. I would go to the hospital and play there with a friend of mine who was leading sing-alongs there, and, you know, the long-term care wing. And I was playing at the school for special events, or, you know, going on the Santa train, or just all these things that I was always volunteering my time and playing, and everybody appreciated that. And so I was culturally very involved. I was politically very involved, environmentally, you know, doing all these things. I was not just an unknown entity in this small town of 5,000 people. People knew me. And then when I did this forbidden thing I mean, this is just the most taboo subject, the Holocaust. I mean, think about it.
It's getting better.
Yeah, it is. Now people are waking up a lot. But this has been so taboo, and I mean, they force it, educate or force indoctrinate children, you know, with forced studies, Holocaust studies, and museums popping up everywhere in places where you think, well, what does this have to do with, you know, that history over there at that time? And but, you know, you see, get my point. So then suddenly I do this thing, and oh my goodness, I had to be taken down. So the town, it's kind of like they acted almost like in one entity, one unison entity, and it was unbelievable. But I'm glad it happened. I mean, it wasn't easy. I'm glad it happened just because it was a huge educational tool. This is one of their ways of keeping their lies going, is by, you know, ostracizing anybody who dares to question, or just knocking them down, making them to be crazy, a nutcase, literally spitting in my face, figuratively and literally.
And, in your,
you know,
town?
Of course they
My
town.
Wow.
In my town. Or shouting me down, and then, you know, amongst the tourists in the park there. And, I mean, I could talk for hours about the things that happened. And so, but I don't want to do that. It's just to make the point that there are many ways that our enemy uses, many methods, many weapons that they use to keep their narrative going, to basically shut us down if we dare to start to think for ourselves. And I experienced it firsthand, so it is something that I can talk about and show people and say, look, this is one of the things they do. This is how they do it. But does it make any sense? No, it doesn't. See, they never argued with me or debated with me about
exactly
what I had said. No.
They won't call you a liar. They just call you a racist.
Yeah. And they named me all kinds of things that I hadn't yet even looked into. You know, the learning curve is steep, and hadn't yet peeled all the layers of the onion, you know, sort of thing, learning everything. And I mean, I wasn't yet even fully racially conscious then, because first I learned about 9/11, and that was 10 years after 9/11. That was the key to my awakening, that it is not all as they say it is. And that was kind of the hardest step to take, because suddenly, you know, this shattered my illusions of, you know, what they taught us all our lives about government for the people, by the people, of the people, all that stuff. And, oh, we live in such a great country, freedom of speech, freedom of the press, freedom of this, freedom of that. And all that got shattered just learning about 9/11, because I realized, oh, they're lying to us about big things. It made me actually feel sick for a few weeks. I was feeling nauseous for a few weeks just as my world was kind of turning upside down. Or actually, more accurately, should say, my world was turning back upright, right? You know, we're all upside down in this upside down world until we get ourselves upright again, onto our feet and seeing clearly, right? Then, you know, after that, okay, go down the proverbial rabbit hole and start figuring out the Holocaust. And it took me a while before I dared look into that, because that was kind of like, no, this is, no, they can't be lying about this. How could they lie about this? This is big.
It was similar for me. I was raised in the Bible Belt down here in Texas, and so all of my life they were God's. I was very religious until my mid-30s, and so I was raised, they were God's chosen people. And whenever I started to get red-pilled, so to speak, the Jewish question, it was hard for me to swallow those red pills. I pushed back against it. But the evidence just kept piling up and piling up. You know, the story that pushed me over the edge and really cranked it up to 11 was that Cambridge University professor that took the ground-penetrating radar to Treblinka, where there was supposedly 800,000 people buried in mass graves. He told the university he was going to go do some science stuff with it, but he lied. He took it to Treblinka, and he found zero mass graves, not a single one. There's 800,000 right off the top.
There you go. Even at the biggest or most notorious camp, Auschwitz, they changed the numbers there on the official plaques after the Ernst Zundel, the
yeah, where the cremation
1980s
ovens were.
Yeah, because they used to have a plaque there that said 4 million. Were, you know, slaughtered or killed or murdered by the Nazis here. And then they quietly removed that plaque after the great Holocaust trials in Toronto in the 1980s. That was, you know, against Ernst Zundel. And then they replaced that with the number 1.5 million, and then they reduced it further to 1.1. That's still a lie, but, you know, even in their official numbers, they subtracted 3 million. But Jewish math is very interesting, you know.
there were more Jews in the census in Europe after the war than there was before. But, you know, there was another camp called Dachau, and that was supposed to be one of the mass grave places, not one of the cremation places. And within 6 months of that professor doing his expose on Treblinka, they had concreted all around it as if they were making some huge parking lot. They didn't need a parking lot. They just didn't want him to use his radar on that camp.
Uh-huh. Interesting. Yes. So, back to what happened, how and why did I end up in jail? Like I said, I went back to visit Alfred December 2017, so that's a year and a half after I did that video. And then when I was there, I learned about the Sylvia Stoltz trial, not far from where Alfred lived. It was going to be in a courthouse in Munich, and we could just take the train there, or actually a friend was visiting with a car, so we drove. I wanted to see what a speech crime trial looks like in Germany. I mean, I was quite naive and innocently doing this. People afterwards criticized me, well, why would she do that? Or why would she even go to Germany when she knows that there's these laws and all that? What, they even wrote letters to me in jail. Why would you go to Germany? And I'm thinking, aren't you asking the wrong question? Shouldn't you be asking, why would there even exist such laws that you can't say something didn't happen or did happen that goes against their story? Like history being enshrined into law? What? You're asking the wrong question. I'm just, you know, living my life as a free woman, thinking that that's our God-given state, is it not? That we are just free to move and free to live and free to talk, free to live, right? So anyway, there I am in Germany, and we go to this Sylvia Stoltz trial on January 3rd, 2018, because she had been charged with some speech crimes. If you'd like, I can get into that, but I'll just finish what happened there. So I was spotted in the public gallery by, you know, whatever, the creatures there running the trial, and there was a brief intermission called after the trial had just begun. Everybody was quite surprised, said, what's going on? Nobody called for, the lawyers didn't call for intermission. Somebody's just deciding there's going to be a break here. So we step outside into the corridor, the throng of us, you know, people who are the supporters of Sylvia Stoltz. And suddenly I'm surrounded by these uniformed and armed thugs. I guess they're called police officers. And they arrested me. And get this, I was kind of stuttering and stammering something about, I'm a free woman. I'm a Canadian. I'm a free woman. And they said, you should have thought of that before you came to Germany. Think about that. Should have thought about that before you came to Germany. Like, you know, that being a free woman in Canada, isn't that incredible? So they were basically saying, yeah, well, you're not free here. So they threw me down into the cell in the basement. Then I ended up, you know, getting transported to the jail. I'm making a long story short here. And I was in jail for the next 10 months. Now, the first 6 months of that was without a trial yet. The trial began in early July, so 6 months after I was there. And the trial was Alfred and myself were put on trial together, because Alfred had made a lot of videos. You know, as the prosecutor says, he had even more criminal energy than I did. So that was a very interesting trial. 4 months later, you know, we're both found guilty, of course. But I'm telling you, we were very, very joyful going through that trial, because every single day of the trial, and there were 20 trial days over the course of the 4 months, every single day of those, the trial, we were just jubilant, because they were proving to us that we had truth on our side, and they didn't. Now, we knew that this was not going to work in our favor, because we understood full well that the criminals are running the system, and that we, you know, we were not the criminals. They were. But it still filled us with joy, because there is nothing like knowing that you have truth on your side. It doesn't matter what they do to you. If you know that and know it deeply in your heart, that you have truth on your side.
Can you give us some particulars of what was said during the trial? For example, you say that you had the truth on your side. Did they try to show you pictures of the starving bodies? And then were you able to rebut and tell them why you felt like it was exaggerated or faked or whatever?
Yeah, no, that's an excellent question. How did they prove to us that we had truth on our side? It was not that. It was not about the contents of what we were saying. In fact, that's illegal to even tell them or explain to them how you have reached your conclusions. Then you are doing new crime. In fact, Alfred was given a longer sentence for things that he said and did in our trial. But it was through their methods of, for example, not permitting any of the witnesses that we were desiring, that we would have called for, that we wanted to call for. That's one of the ways they showed us that. Another one would be that this happened already day one. Alfred started to read his defense testimony. And let me just explain something else here. Why is he reading this? If you are just speaking in the court in Germany, nothing is recorded. There's no transcript. If you want to get a transcript of the Schaefer sibling trial in 2018, you will fail, because it does not exist. But the only thing that does go in onto the record and is in the written record, so I guess you could call it a partial transcript, is anything that was submitted in writing. So you can read your defense you know, like a statement or whatever. So Alfred had this 72-page document that he started to read. The judge got very impatient within the first few minutes. Alfred was not even halfway through the first page. And, I mean, the entire body language of the head judge was such that, like, let's just get this over with. Come on, let's just get this over with. But he just said, well, just, you know, condense it to, you know, a few sentences. Just condense that to a few sentences. Like, you know, that's what he actually said. He said, just, can you condense this to a few sentences? Anyway, so Alfred's lawyer, he said, well, we have to recuse here, or we have to have a break here. And they have a break, and my lawyer and his lawyer, they draft up a request to recuse the judges based on being, what do you call it?
Biased.
Biased. Thank you for the word. I was just missing the word.
I'm here to help.
Yeah, and then, of course, they're not recused. They come back, and this happened over and over and over again. I lost count of how many times that our lawyers wrote up their request to recuse the judges based on bias and how they were working as a team with the state prosecutor. I was going to say Crown prosecutor. I'm so used to saying that here in Canada. But anyway, the state prosecutor. And there were many more instances. For instance, another one, something that my lawyer had objected to that he did, and he said, oh, no, you can take that up during the appeal. And this was way before the end of the trial, so it's way before there's a verdict, and he's already talking about an appeal, which implies that there's a verdict already made. Verdict first, show trial later. That's how it went. I mean,
and that's how it was.
That's how it was. That's exactly how it was. Verdict first, trial later. Same thing with the bail hearings that, you know, because I'm in jail so long before the trial even began, there were several bail hearings, like, to, you know, my lawyer's trying to argue that I should be able to just go and be at my brother's place and await trial. They could take my passport. I could be required to report to the police every day or every week or whatever, but no, they all failed. And when they failed, they would present a document that did not resemble anything that happened at the hearing. It's like they would make things up. It was unbelievable. I mean, yeah. So every day they prove to us that they are not supporting truth, that they are just supporting get this guilty verdict, you know, guilty before even, well, whatever the saying goes, you know. I could give many more examples, and right now they're not fresh in my mind, but that's just a few, you know. But we were absolutely having a blast. Alfred, my brother, has a great sense of humor. Sometimes when we're being escorted from between the court down to the holding cells in the basement of the courthouse, you know, down the stairs, along the corridor, down another flight of stairs and around the corners. Like, it was a long procession, and he'd be handcuffed to a male guard and I'd be handcuffed to a female guard, and we'd go in procession. And some of these guards, they got to know us, and some of them were quite, you know, less rigid than others, shall we say. They actually were quite warm and friendly. We're not officially supposed to talk with each other, but Alfred and I, Alfred is very funny. He was telling jokes along the way, and we were just absolutely euphoric. And it's very interesting that you could be in such a state of mind when you're in such a serious predicament.
What is Alfred's current status? Is he still incarcerated, or is he free?
No, thank you for that question. Just a couple of days ago, he celebrated a year of so-called freedom out. You know, he's been out of jail since February of last year. And in between, okay, he had two jail terms. The first one lasted 4 years. So he was incarcerated in July. It was at the end of the first week of trial. They went to his home and kidnapped him out of his home and threw him in jail, even though there's no guilty verdict or anything yet. And he was no risk, flight risk, like it was for me. I mean, they kept me there because otherwise I would just go back to Canada and I'm out of their clutches. But with Alfred, he's happily married in Germany, and there was no flight risk. But anyway, they jailed him anyway. And then, you know, end of October, they put the verdict. and he got 38 months. I got 10 months time served, so they released me then, but it was 10 months time served. And he was in jail then. And then the following summer, they did another trial to up his sentence. They, in the end, gave him 4 years in total because, of, like I said, they upped it for things that he said in our trial, like actually explaining. Here's the thing. When he was saying things and you know, making his defense, and the judge kept on stopping him. He said, I should warn you. I must warn you here because if you proceed along those lines, you are breaking the law. So the judge, it was his duty to warn Alfred to stop talking because he was going to get new charges. He's basically telling him that. And Alfred would basically wave that away and say, thank you for that, but I am just, you want to lock me up for 6 million years anyway, and I'm just speaking the truth, so I will continue speaking. And then he would continue speaking. So that's how the trial went. Like he Alfred talked a lot during this trial and basically said it all, just laid it out. Like they have no excuse after the system collapses of just, oh, we just didn't know or we just didn't understand this. No, this trial was highly educational. Basically what happened in the trial is that Alfred's videos and the one that I did, the short one, and plus another couple of short ones, there was also this CODO video, that's the Committee for Open Debate on the Holocaust, less than 4 minutes long, and it's where we answer the question, why do you support open debate on the Holocaust? Just answering that question was a crime. So not even saying this or that happened or didn't happen, just answering the question, why do you support open debate on the Holocaust? That was a crime. Both of us were found guilty of a crime for participating in that video. Imagine that. But anyway, back to, so Alfred, he talked a lot, and actually I was going to say something else with that, and I lost my train of thought, something about the judge. Yeah, that he did indeed get more time nailed onto him, so 4 years, and he every day of the 4 years he was in jail, you know, violent criminals like rapists or whatever, if they're on good behavior in jail, they get out on two-thirds or half-time or whatever, if that's their first offense or first time in jail. Not so with political prisoners. They have to be in jail the full term. Even if you've never had any charges against you, no prior convictions, nothing. Speech crime is the most serious crime in the world that we, you know, our upside-down world that is run by the thugs, by the criminal. It's a criminal system. So anyway, then he was out for just over a year, so from summer of 2022, like July 2022, he got out. August of 2023, he was picked up again and thrown in jail for, this will blow your mind. Sit down, everybody. Why he got another 6 months of jail? Because during his previous jail stint, and he was on solitary confinement. That's another story. I'll explain that. But, well, basically for rebelling against their mask mandates. Like he was in jail during that whole insane, you know, COVID stuff. So he refused to wear a mask, and he said, "Look, I'm an old man. I need to breathe." So anyway, solitary confinement, but you do get your 60 minutes of fresh air. He's out in the courtyard, and they don't have enough hours in the day to give all the people who are in solitary confinement each have their own hour. So there was another fellow prisoner out there in the courtyard. And then, you know, prisoners, you tell each other what you're there for, and Alfred is explaining what he's there for, what he's in jail for, and he's showing how high his dog Pavlov can jump. I don't know, Texas Vet, if you know this meme. It's Alfred's very special meme of doing the wonderful old Roman salute. You know, they call it the Hitler salute. And saying, look, see how high my dog Pavlov can jump. And the name is very nice, Pavlov. You know, these are these Pavlovian trigger responses to things that we're not supposed to do or just symbols and whatnot. So, see how high my dog Pavlov can jump. Anyway, the guard got all uppity and said, oh, Herr Schäfer, you know, Hitler salute, blah, blah, blah. And Alfred didn't even have to say a word. The other prisoner says, oh, no, 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 he's just showing me how high his dog can jump. But anyway, this guard, he filed charges against Alfred for doing that gesture, an open arm gesture in the courtyard of a prison. I say, when there's a crime, isn't there a victim? And I mean, you can argue what is the crime, but even if there was some kind of a crime that he did by, you know, doing some dangerous gesture, it's an open arm gesture that actually says, here, I come in peace and friendship. But anyway, this guard filed, did the charges, and this drags a long time through the courts. And finally, in summer of 2023, Alfred got picked up because he had been found guilty of this terrible crime of doing this gesture
after he got out
in the courtyard.
He was released. He was released, and then they arrested him again.
Yes, you see, so he had already finished serving his 4-year prison sentence, but those charges were still hanging over his head. And then by the time that got all said and done, he was found guilty. So he was supposed to go to jail again. Well, he didn't voluntarily walk to their door and go, so they picked him up at his home. And that's
now, does he still live in Germany?
Oh, yes. Yes.
Oh, Lord. Careful
that's his
now?
Home.
Is he being careful? Is he being, relatively quiet at this stage?
No. No, 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 no.
Well, then, is he considering running for office with the Alternative for Deutschland party then?
Oh, no, no, no. That's all controlled opposition, too. Like, that's a whole that's a whole other subject, too. No, but he is really upping the fight. You know what he's doing now? And I want to tell you all about this. This is absolutely fantastic. So after he got out of jail, I used to think that if you do a crime, you serve your time, and then that's it. You're clean, and there's no more things that you have to do. But no, that's not the case. He has to go monthly to a, I don't know what they call it, probation officer or a parole officer or whatever they call it.
Probation.
Monthly visit. Yeah, probation officer to just check in with them. They want to kind of see what he's up to and, just keep tabs on him. So he takes full advantage of these visits. He doesn't get grumpy and down about it. He goes with great excitement and shows them stuff and brings them evidence of this or that. And then he has been bringing them the evidence that there's a big, huge insurance fraud going on to do with 9/11. The big insurance payout to Larry Silverstein, Lucky Larry, for 9/11. All about that. And this is ultimately being once again put onto the shoulders of the German people to pay out, because there's this giant insurance company in Munich called Munich Re, like reinsurance.
Yeah.
And they insure other insurance companies. I guess I'd never heard of that before, but that's how that works. So they are on the hook for this Larry Silverstein 9/11 fraud. And Alfred had on his computer desktop this 2-minute clip of a video of Larry Silverstein gloating about having on his desk the plans for the new One World Trade Center tower in April of 2000. So that's like, 17 months before 9/11 happened. So that would say, that would indicate foreknowledge of the crime of 9/11. And so Alfred had this, and then, his computers, everything got stolen by the police thugs that raided his home several times. This happened, and then he did get his computers back. Like, they, a year and a half after they had stolen the computers, they called up his wife, I guess, and said, you can come and pick up the computer, the stuff that we have here in our possession. So brings back home, and then Alfred, after he gets out of jail, he's very concerned that they probably just destroyed it. But he opens it up and looks, and there it is, untouched. There's that clip of Larry Silverstein, and he always sees this as a very positive sign that, hey, they're helping us. They actually really secretly want us to win, these thugs in the system. Huh. Like, otherwise they would have destroyed this. But here it is, here's the evidence. So he brings this stuff to these parole officers, like on a USB stick, and presents to them. And lately, there was a new parole officer there. It was a woman who said to Alfred, she said, well, have you charged them yet? Have you laid charges against them yet? And this just fires up Alfred, and he immediately gets to work and does this with the help of some friends who can put this all into good, legalese language and very, very, very well put together. These charges against the state, basically, and Munich Re. So now that's it, what he's in the middle of. course, they fired back, not with a response to that, but laying new charges against Alford for some speech crime that he did in, you know, 2022 or
of course.
Whenever. There's this big game going on right now, but he is absolutely just enjoying this. Like, it's just this huge, big game going on. But he says, they're falling apart. They're behaving like monkeys in a zoo while we are coming together.
Yeah, our narrative is being very successful, even in the face of all of this censorship that they've put on us. So that's reassuring. Now, what about you? Your situation? You were let go with 10 months served, and you were allowed to come home to Canada, right?
Yes.
And have you faced any further legal repercussions? Have they tried to come after you again?
The closest I've come to that is I had a visit a year and a half ago from the hate crimes unit of the RCMP, that's the Royal Canadian Mounted Police. That happened September 1st of 2023, so that's a year and a half ago, approximately. And they paid me a visit, which meant two men, 2 days, because they had to drive here all the way from the Lower Mainland and near Vancouver. And I live up in kind of, you know, north, central, eastern BC, British Columbia. It's quite a long drive. So they would have had to stay overnight. And they looked for me here. They found me here. And we had a little chat outside. I didn't invite them in my home. We had a chat for 2 hours or so. And I know a lot of people, they criticize me. They shouldn't even talk to them. But I had a wonderful chat with them. And educated them about a lot of things. And we got onto all kinds of topics, and I explained a few things to them about how these laws work. And, you know, just I had a really in-depth discussion with them. And then a neighbor happened by. He was witness to part of that, and he said a few things that were actually in support of me. And, yeah, anyway, these guys came from the hate crimes unit basically to check me out and also to warn me that there is this law in Canada that you're not allowed to talk about the Holocaust, or, you know, not allowed to deny it, because that does exist since June of 2022. But I am not paying attention to that. I'm not thinking about it. I wrote a follow-up letter to these RCMP guys telling them, you know, if you could lock up every single person in Canada, it's not going to change what happened in the past. Do you think that magically would just, that's like a magic wand that would actually change what happened or did not happen in history? Like, how much sense does it make to put history into a law? Something either happened or it didn't, and then they make a law about it to make it permanent. Does that actually...
It's the only historical event that you can be imprisoned for denying that it happened.
Soon to be joined by our own genocide here in Canada. It's fake, just as fake as the Holocaust, but, you know, they...
It's very manufactured, yes.
It's the residential school children, right? You've heard about that?
I'm pretty familiar with what's going on in Canada. I have a lot of people that I'm associated with, in contact with, that are from Canada. The voice clip that I was trying to listen to when you very first joined was from one of my Canadian brothers.
Nice. Very nice. Yeah. So just in brief, you know, this story that blew up, I think it's now 2.5 years ago or 3 years ago now, about the mass graves or the unmarked graves at the residential schools, Kamloops. That was kind of, you know, the starting point. And since then, they've popped up everywhere at all these residential schools across the country where, oh, you know, the missionaries or the people running the schools or the Oblate Fathers or whatever, they all just murdered these children and put them into graves. And now you're not allowed to... Well, there is already a bill that's been put into the House of Commons. It has not yet passed, but, you know, this is in the works. And the wording in that bill, it just so many parallels with the Holocaust denial bills. And, you know, they're not going to dig them up. They have not dug up a single one of these unmarked graves that they supposedly found with this ground-penetrating radar. And, I mean, this apple orchard at the Kamloops Residential School, it's just, you know, lots of things have happened in that apple orchard. Like, there has been also some septic systems there, but it was an orchard, so there were roots. This ground penetrating radar picks up any anomaly in the soil. So lots of anomalies, but they haven't dug them up because that would be disrespectful. No. We want to do our, you know, nice, what do you call it, like ceremony or whatever to help send these souls of the children home and all this stuff. Like, I mean, there's so many things about this that are very parallel with the Holocaust story, the narrative, and they are on their way to making this a crime in Canada to question it, and then you could go to jail if you do. So, yeah, this is all an anti-white agenda, is it not? Like, this is really what it comes down to. It's an anti-white agenda, and they have told us that.
It's been going on for so long. I mean, they have orchestrated so many wars between European nations. They are our eternal enemy.
Yes.
I mean, we're talking all the way back to the Black Plague, and they killed a third of Europe. I mean, that was because they were poisoning our wells.
Yes.
Stuff. But it looks like that you're certainly not shutting up. Your bio here on X, it mentions a show that you do on republicbroadcasting.org. For those of you guys that are watching the live stream on my other social medias and that are not listening here at the moment, you will see that I have opened those websites, and she has a show called The Flip Side with Monica. And that's on republicbroadcasting.org. And then she has a blog called freespeechmonica.com. And the audience would be looking at that at the moment. Are you still doing your Saturday shows?
Yes, I do.
Excellent.
I'm really enjoying that. And there's another website. I'll just, since you're talking about websites and whatnot, the Truth and Justice for Germans. .com, so that's all one word spelled out, truthandjusticeforgermans.com.
That is linked in your on your Republic Broadcasting Network website. I see the link, and I have now opened it, and people are looking at it right now. Now, of course, not the people here in the space, but the people on Odyssey and BitChute and GoMTV that are watching this later, they are looking at it right now.
Right on. Mm-hmm. And then I've got an Odyssey channel, just my name there, and also Truth and Justice for Germans Society is on BitChute and Odyssey, and we just have a few videos that are being posted there, and some volunteers in our organization, Truth and Justice for Germans Society. So yeah, I'm very, very active. Actually, I'm busier than ever with this work, doing this kind of thing, trying to help our brothers and sisters to learn the truth about what's going on in the world. We need to know who our enemy is. We need to be able to name the enemy, and that is, you know, the Jews. They have been at war with us. We did not start this war. We did not desire this war, but we do need to know that we are in a war. It's not exactly a conventional war. So many people go about living their lives not understanding. And yet, there are looking around and saying, whoa, there's something going on, this isn't good, but we can't really speak out. Like, they notice that there's a lot of the change in the complexion of the towns and cities where they live. You know, the people look different, they're flooding in. But if you say one word about immigration, let alone, you know, flooding, just open the gates, and then, oh, you're a racist, and racist has got to be about the most weaponized of those labels that are used against us. Again, we need to understand these mechanisms that our enemy uses against us so that we can let these things just run off us like water off a duck's back. And then actually turn it around by embracing these things. If they call you any of these things, say, oh, thank you for noticing, or something like that. Just take the wind out of their sails if people start, you know, oh, you're this, you're that, all these little labels and boxes they want to put you in. These are just weapons. And we have really been very, how shall I say, the white race in general is quite vulnerable to these weapons because we are made to easily feel guilt because we have empathy, we care about others. This, you know, when we are infiltrated by an enemy, these traits that are actually beautiful qualities, which have enabled us to live in very harsh northern climates and whatnot, they are used against us as weapons. And we're so trusting too that, you know, until you wake up and then you realize what's going on, and then you are not just going to believe everything anymore. But initially, I mean, I just believed. I went through life believing everything they're telling us, basically. Well, why would they lie? Or how they, you know, like, especially when you're told you have freedom of speech and freedom of the press, well, then how can you even imagine that the press is lying to you? Because wouldn't the other people in the press take hold them to account? And, oh, my goodness, it just goes on and on, you know. So, yeah, these words that they use against us, we have to learn to not let them affect us at all. At all. And just laugh it off.
Well, it's obvious that you're not new to the game of speaking your mind and trying to get our message out there, because we are an hour into the interview, and I haven't had to prod you or poke you hardly at all. So many times I feel like I'm trying to drag out, you know, the content from my guests, but this is delightful.
Oh, I'm so glad. Sometimes I've got all these things just wanting to come out all at once, and then I get onto tangents and then the other tangents.
So down in the description of the video that you people are watching on the replay, you will have a link to her X account, her Republic Broadcasting Network show, her Truth and Justice for Germans, and her blog, and everything will be down there. So hopefully we can get you a little bit more of a spotlight on your message, because you're preaching. It sounds like a lot of the things you're saying sound like something that I would say. So I'm fully supportive of what you're trying to do. We need to outreach.
Well, thank you, Texas Vet. I knew that when I was watching your interviews a few years ago that, yeah, this is, you were doing excellent work, really, really good work. And I know you were talking also so much about, you know, the kinds of things you were doing. So I think you're a very important person in our movement to win this war.
Well, thank you. That is how I got my start, was interviewing other people. I knew that if I had other people that were already had a platform onto my show, I would be exposed to their audiences, and it worked. It built a pretty good following. But I shifted gears, and I wanted to be a little bit more of a informative type show. So I switched to doing a current events, a weekly current events show, which I still do on Saturdays, but it's from a pro-white perspective.
Fantastic. And after you approached me about doing this, I did listen to your most recent one, and it was excellent.
Well, thank you.
Thank you. That is just fantastic.
Yeah. So now, that being said, I've been trying to figure out a way to generate more content, and I've had a couple of ideas, like hosting spaces or doing a little casual just surfing around the web thing where we talk about things that are happening. But I feel like that I've got to the point where I'm a pretty good interviewer. I feel like I've got a knack for it. So you are my first guest back, and for my new focus of trying to get back into interviewing people in the pro-white community. So thank you for getting the ball rolling.
Well, I thank you. That is a great honor. Thank you so much.
Yeah, next week will be Zach Logos. And
wonderful.
Yeah, he's a bright young lad. I like him. I was one of the first.
Absolutely.
I was one of the very first people.
A recent guest. What? I'm sorry. He was a recent guest of mine on my flip side.
Oh, good.
We collaborate a little bit. Mm-hmm. I think he's absolutely brilliant. Yes.
Well, I was one of the first guests on his show when he very first was trying to get started. So he's returning the favor. He's become rather popular, and it's not surprised. He's, like I say, he's a bright young lad.
Yes, and a very good teacher of these things. He's a very good communicator. I like his Logos Academy series. If people aren't familiar with that, look that up, his Logos Academy, where he stands in front of a whiteboard and sort of like a professor at the front of a classroom, and he explaining, he distills some big topics down into I don't know, 40 minutes, 45 minutes, which is, and he does it so skillfully. It's amazing, actually.
Well, now that we've, you know, had about an hour or so to talk, I feel like that if you're okay with it, we could open up the floor and some of the people in here listening can come up and ask you a question if they so desire. You don't have to.
Yes.
You're okay with that? All right. Well,
absolutely.
Request a microphone, people, and you're welcome to talk to Monica yourself if you like. But while we're waiting for someone to think of something to ask you, I just want to reassure myself that you're safe now, right? When you walk around town, do you still feel threatened as you did when this first came out? Are you okay now?
I live in a different place now. I moved out of Jasper about 5 years ago, 5.5 years ago, and I live in a community. It's not that far to drive. It's only about 2 hours away, but it's completely different around here. I never think about, you know, dangers or anything. People treat me well. I've got friends here. I play music with people. I have a couple of different groups of people that I jam with. And I have friends here, and I think there's a lot of people around here who are pretty awake. And, well, I know there are because I've talked with them. I've educated a few of them.
Yeah, well, a lot of people are waking up, so that's I'm not surprised.
Yes, and this is a different sort of place than Jasper was. It's there are farms, there are people who are very practical people. And I can tell you, it just has a completely different mentality. It's not that same mob mentality or groupthink that I experienced in Jasper. And Jasper is still very, very leftist. And, it's a completely different kind of place. And it always was, but I didn't realize it. Like, it was always kind of more leftist than the rest of Alberta. It's in the province of Alberta. But I didn't know that. And at the time, I was thinking, oh, Jasper's so great. I mean, Jasper's beautiful, don't get me wrong, like as far as a beautiful place. But as far as the politics or the feel of the town, I used to think so highly of it. But boy, did they ever show the true colors of all this love of diversity. And, oh, we embrace, you know, diversity and inclusion, and boy, they don't when it comes time to somebody who has reached different conclusions about history.
Right. Well, you know, it's kind of like a mind virus.
Yes.
That's why you see such wokeness in the larger cities, is because it catches like a disease. And the more the population density is, the more easily it spreads. So that's why when you get out to these more rural, small towns, people are still normal, so to speak, because they haven't been infected.
Mind virus is a good way to put it. It is a disease. Mental illness caused by the contamination, the poisons of the lies.
Well, that's why we're turning on the microphone. We're trying to push back against it. So I'm glad to see that you have your own show going on.
Thank you. I'm thrilled about it. It's very stimulating for me to do this, because suddenly I'm, you know, the shoe's on the other foot. Like, I have responded to people asking me to come on their shows all through these years, and now suddenly I'm the one doing the interviewing, so I'm enjoying it.
Oh, good. So I see that it looks like your main headquarters for your Saturday show is on republicbroadcasting.org, which is fine. I'm sure it's a good platform. And now, you had mentioned that you had an Odyssey channel. Are you like uploading replays of these shows?
Yes.
To your Odyssey? Okay, and now that...
I have a friend. Yes, I have a friend who turns my Flipside shows into MP4s, and then
okay.
I upload them to my Odyssey channel.
Excellent.
So they are there. She puts nice picture with it.
Now, that being said, I would like to encourage you to open a channel on goyimtv.com. It's literally a website for our message. There is no other message on that website. It's your hardcore pro-white or your content does not get allowed on that platform. I find that lately I'm getting more interaction and more engagement on GoyimTV than I am even on Odyssey. So.
Okay, thank you for that. I'll take that under consideration.
Yeah, if you have any questions about that, I can link you up to the people that that own the website, and they will help you, give you a streaming key. You can either live stream or you can just, you know, upload later, whatever you want to do. But it's a good website. Right. You should look into it.
Yeah, I'm also looking at FTJ Media. I want to
that's a good one.
Do something there too. So I just have to figure it all out. I wish I had a techie at my side, because I'm really not very technologically oriented with all this stuff, and I struggle with that. And but anyway, yeah, doing the best I can.
Well, I know that many people in our movement are familiar with your situation. Not so much with Albert, because he's overseas, but you here in the American pro-white community are a well-known entity. So I'm glad to see that you're doing your own show. That's great.
Okay, thanks. Yeah, Albert is it used to be the other way around, for sure, that he was the guy, because he had some really excellent videos. They can still be found if you go to altcensored.com and put in Alfred Schaefer there. Somebody kindly uploaded most of his videos there, because he started making videos back when, well, he started figuring things out, and then later he had to make apology video for the things that he still was under an illusion.
Yeah.
Like, his first major video was 9/11 gatekeepers and controlled opposition, and it was based on a dialogue that he had by email with Noam Chomsky. Like, he got in his actual sort of personal email address, and he sent him an email, and lo and behold, Noam Chomsky answers, and then there was this flurry of emails back and forth, and then Alfred made this excellent video out of it, and with his commentaries and whatnot. But he was still suffering under the illusion, the lies of, oh, Nazis were bad, you know. And so there's one part in the video where he was comparing, you know, the Star of David with the swastika, and that these were, you know, equally bad or something. Then he started getting all these people commenting underneath. This is still on YouTube, when he had his YouTube channel before it got axed. But people say, oh, this is just an agent. Alfred's just an agent, because, you know, he was still learning. And then later he made another video called Police Raid and My Confession, which is a great title. It's a good hook. People can look for these videos. Actually, I think I've uploaded some of those onto my Odyssey channel, and I really should get to work uploading all of his videos onto my Odyssey channel so that people can take a look at these. But that was a really good video, Police Raid and My Confession.
Well, it sounds like he would be an excellent guest, but I'm very reluctant to have Alfred on my show because of the draconian laws that you guys suffer under over there. Not you, but they. For example, the number two guy for Patriotic Alternative in England, his internet nickname was Charlie Big Potatoes. He came on my show, but he thought he was safe because he had moved to Spain. But after 3 weeks after he came on my show, I don't know if it was because of my show, but regardless, 3 weeks after he came on my show, he was arrested and extradited back to England and is incarcerated right now because of some of the inflammatory things he said when he was my guest.
So he was arrested in Spain, you're saying?
Yep, and they drug his happy ass back to England. His wife was from Spain. So his wife and children are still in Spain, but Big Potatoes is imprisoned because of because of the things he said on my show. Probably.
It could be, and I mean, Alfred, he's just going full force, so he's already talking on shows, you know, saying all kinds of things. So
he might ought to consider moving, man. You know,
but you know where to go to. Like, we got, I think we'll all have to fight.
In regards for free speech, America is the safest place in the world for the moment, in regards to free speech. But yes, his rifle may be needed in Germany in the future. So
yes, that's the point. Like I think that our people need to fight this war where they live rather than try to escape to somewhere else. So I don't know. I mean, I think that's what else. Plus, he's happily married there. They have a beautiful place there.
Now, within America, there are a lot of pro-white people that are relocating to more intentional communities for white people. Mm-hmm. There are movements going on in Maine and in Montana / Idaho, and then northern Arkansas, southern Missouri is a big community that's being built by some people. So we're consolidating our power.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we're kind of we have to have strongholds to
yes,
leave our women and children behind in relative safety, while we go out and engage the enemy that is inevitably going to attack us, because the race war. I don't care what starts the Civil War in America; it will devolve into a racial conflict. It's inevitable.
I think you're absolutely right. No, this is very, very good and valid point that you're making. I have a little bit of a change of heart about this, like moving, since my interview with Johannes Achenbach from South Africa. Do you know who he is?
He's been on my show back when he used to go by the moniker Boar Jack.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah, no, before he came on my show, I was of the mindset that the South Africans should flee, and because they were so outnumbered that it was hopeless for them. But after he was a guest on my show, I'm like, no, stand and fight. Even if you
exactly.
know you're going to lose, stand and fight.
Exactly, Texas Vet. Thank you. Because we talked about this place called Orania in South Africa, and he's very much against that type of thing, that everybody goes, you know, to Orania, because he's saying we're conceding defeat.
Well, he was also very upset to see that Trump offered refugee status to the white South Africans because of the land appropriation laws that have just been passed down there. He says, uh-huh. Well, now you're going to take all of our people that aren't brave enough to fight, and they're going to flee to America, and makes our job even harder to hold off these black hordes that are going to be coming for us.
Yeah, see, so this is all very interesting. Just to think and talk about this, you're so right. It's so complex, isn't it? Like here you think, oh, good, he's giving refugee status to these South Africans, and yet that makes it harder for them.
Well, I've been obsessed with the struggles our people are about to have to face for several years. And I've surrounded myself with people that think like I do. So I've had a lot of in-depth conversations on the geopolitical problems that we're about to face, both politically and kinetically. It's going to get ugly.
Yes. No, this is good. But you are absolutely right. We do have to surround ourselves with people who know and understand like-minded people and who are going to fight with us in our community here. I've been talking about that for quite some time, and there are, you know, people who are very aware of that we need to have each other's backs when they come for our ostriches. And the reason I say that is lately there's this ostrich farm, and actually I need to get myself updated on what the status is. They were supposed to slaughter all their ostriches, you know, this is this war on the people by starvation.
Because of bird flu?
Yeah, all that stuff, right? That
that's
nonsense,
bullshit.
Total lies. And so I was using that as a symbolic, you know, sort of a, like, you know, when they come for our ostriches, are we going to just let them do that? Or are we going to, you know, have our guns pointed at them and say, get off our property, you're trespassing, and that we protect our places, that we protect ourselves? I mean, we can't just let this happen. There's millions and millions and millions of, you know, farm animals that have been slaughtered over the last few years.
Especially chickens.
Pardon?
Lately, it's been especially chickens using the bird flu bullshit. And our enemy is going to come after us with three different prongs of attack. It's going to be more pandemics, it's going to be famine, and it's going to be warfare. So that's part of the orchestrated famine. I mean, why wouldn't they use famine again? I mean, it worked so well in both the Bolshevik Revolution in the 20s in Russia and the Color Revolution in the 60s in China. They starved millions of people to great effect. So why it would be foolish not for them not to try to use famine again. And the pandemic strategy is quite clear. I mean, we saw it in full force a couple of years ago. And these conflicts that are coming to our countries is going to be the third prong of attack, where it's actual kinetic warfare. Again. But that's the cycle of civilizations. Every 80-ish, 90-ish years.
And the famine, it's not even guesswork. Because they've already been hard at it to undermine our whole food network, our system, our farms. I mean, we already talked about all the slaughtering of farm animals, birds especially, but also cattle. And they've, you know, how many food processing plants went up in flames just mysteriously in the last few years?
270-something. That's meat processing plants, food processing plants, and, you know, chicken farms. Hell, they even crashed a plane into one of them, for God's sake.
Oh, my goodness.
It was a small plane, but whatever. It worked.
Yeah. They're laying the groundwork for the shelves going empty. So far, the shelves are not empty. I'm actually...
Yeah, but those prices are going fucking nuts.
Yes. Yeah.
Which is a clear indication of what's coming.
Yes. But yes, it is. I think you're right about the. You've laid it out very nicely there with the three prongs there.
Yeah, I told you I put a lot of thought into what the white people are facing.
Yes.
That's my obsession and has been for quite a while.
Well, it's a good obsession to have.
That's right. Yeah. At this point, you know, I mean, I may have mentioned earlier that I was very religious and then I wasn't. But I feel like that I've reached a different plateau and I am religious again. But it's my race is my religion now.
Wonderful. Wonderful. You know, on that topic, I've actually become religious again, too. I was raised Catholic, but that all backfired. I became very, very, you know, anti all that. And then I don't know what I called myself for years. I was very science oriented and very, very much along those lines. But then the last few years, well, when I started to learn about, you know, what happened in Bolshevik times and the slaughter of millions and millions of people, and also that they didn't allow people to go to church. They burnt down the churches and they killed the priests and nuns pretty much first. And then I started to think, why? Even as a school child, when we were learning about communism, we didn't learn nearly all the truth about what really happened. But we did learn one little tiny nugget of truth, and that was that they forbade religion. They forbade people to go to church. And even then, when it wasn't even sort of significant to me in any other way, but I still had this curiosity and I wondered why. What would be the harm of having a belief in God or going to church? What would be the harm? Why would they do that? I really didn't understand it until many, many, many years later. And then I thought, whoa, they want to separate us from God and by, you know, forbidding it. And I mean, Jews are atheist, as far as I can tell. They have their religion. It's called Holocaustianity, but that has nothing to do with God, a creator, right? Or what were you going to say, Texas Fed?
Well, according to their Talmud, my interpretation is that they are religious, but they are satanic.
Yes, you're absolutely right. They are God's chosen people, but their God is Satan. Okay, so
there you go.
We have to get that perfectly clear. But anyway, then I have regained a faith in that there is a higher power. And so, you know, to call this higher power God. That's one way, I guess, to do. There is a creator. That's how I think now. And yeah, I think I have the same religion as you do. I know I do, like, as far as the most important thing
yeah,
is
race first.
Our race first. And so that's where I'm at now. But I don't call myself a Christian or anything like that. It is just that I do have faith in a higher power, a creator. And I think that the Jews have been working very hard to separate us from God for
What would you forever. Think about the concept of perhaps they're trying to separate us from our ancestors instead of
absolutely that
God?
Too. Yes.
Because if we connect with our ancestors and feel them in our bones, I believe that would be even more of a motivation to stand up and fight for our people than Christianity would be.
Yeah, and like I say, I don't call myself a Christian. I'm not. But I do have a faith in something higher. But yes, I absolutely 100% agree with you that this racial consciousness, and in my view, that is what that is the creation. We have been created as, I mean, we are the only real Homo sapiens, you could say. You could say the others. Yeah.
No, you're right. We're different. The white race is different than the other races.
Yes, there's,
we're special.
Yeah. And who knows? I think maybe the Jews, they might be descendants from the Neanderthals.
Yeah.
You know, and that this battle goes back to, you know, it's species against species, really.
Well, the reason that they have been our eternal enemy is that we are the only demographic in the world that has enough ingenuity to figure out what they're up to. That's why we have been the ones that have continuously thrown them out of our countries time and time and time again. So they're...
Yes.
But this is different this time, you see. Through technological advancements and refining of their own strategies and tactics, it's more global than it ever has been in the past. Our people have never faced this type of a struggle before because it's all of our countries at once that are under assault. So, to be honest, Hitler had it easy in comparison to what we're about to have to go through, because not only did he have a homogeneous society to work with, he had borders. They weren't in his country. But we've already been invaded. The people that have been put into our countries wanted to kill us before they ever even got here. And we just keep letting them in and keep letting them in. And it's going to be absolute chaos for at least
yes.
the first few weeks until the battle lines start to get properly drawn. And then we'll be able to consolidate into these areas that I mentioned earlier, at least as far as America goes, you know, the Maine, Montana, Arkansas, those areas will be strongholds that we will be able to launch our offensives from.
Yes. No, this is really good. This is really good. So when you're saying these things, I'm thinking, yes, this is good. People should be getting into these strongholds.
I'm not alone.
These strongholds.
There are millions of white men that are thinking along these lines. They can see what's coming. We're not stupid. I mean, that's the whole point. That's why they want to crush us, is because we see through their bullshit. And millions of white men are red-pilled at this point and preparing for the conflict that's inevitably coming. Just a reminder, you people that are listening, I've had my alone time, so to speak, with Monica. You guys are welcome to request a microphone and ask our questions yourself if you want at this point. We've only got maybe 30 minutes left. So come on up and ask her whatever. She's an open book, it seems like, today.
I'm willing to entertain, you know, all these discussions. I am, yeah, it's good. It's good. And, you know, on what you were just saying about the parasite there, the Jews, so, yes, we are, they want to crush us, but they also, they do the best as a parasite in our countries, we being the hosts, because we have these wonderful civilizations and these wonderful countries. We build things up beautifully. And so for them, the enemy, it's like we're the best host, right? Things are nice among our people, but they also hate us. So it's this very strange dichotomy between, you know, loving to be the parasite among us, but they hate us so much because we have figured it out. We do figure it out. We kick them out. We've gone through a period of, you know, the last few decades here of a particularly severe dumbing down, you know, post-World War II, and that's when they really strike, is when people are maximally traumatized. That's when they install their new, you know, mindset into people. I mean, the Germans have gotten it the worst. I mean, if we thought we were brainwashed and indoctrinated, I don't like the word brainwashed, it sounds too clean, but, you know, if we think in Canada we were badly indoctrinated, which we were, Germans in Germany got it the worst because they were at the heart of it.
That's right.
And yes, so it's like it is a mind virus, like you said earlier, just a sickness that where so many Germans became self-hating. But you know, it's changing there too. It is. It is.
It's
changing.
Getting better.
When the German, mm-hmm. when the German people do wake up, watch out. And I have seen poetry. This was a book I had for a couple of weeks in my jail cell of old German poetry, and I was reading poems from hundreds of years ago, and I thought, wow, this could be today.
Written by German authors?
Yes, these were German authors, German poets, old poems of, you know, talking about, you know, waking up like this. They were asleep, and then when they wake up, they'll rise up again, become strong, because the Germans, they're very good-natured, very trusting. I've heard it said from
they're nice until they're not.
Yeah, they're nice until they're not, but they're quite gullible, you could say, because they're so trusting. I'm one of those. Many pranks have been done on me, you know, good-hearted, good-natured friends, you know, doing pranks on me because I'm so trusting and good-natured, and they can pull one over me so easily, you know, but just trusting, high trust, and good nature. And then, you know, so the Jews can parasitize the German people so well, and they do so well there. And, you know, when World War II, well, actually when Adolf Hitler came to power, and then 6 weeks later the Judea declares war on Germany, and, oh gosh, I just lost my train of thought what I was going to say about this. It was just from what I was just talking about there. Texas vet, maybe you can help me.
Well,
was I going with that?
Earlier you alluded to our altruism, and I just wanted to point out that we evolved to have altruism as part of our psyche, because the only way that our European ancestors were able to survive those harsh winters were to have the village to come together and depend upon each other and support each other through the harsh winters. And that made our altruism reach pathological levels. And our enemy has used it to great effect against us. We're always trying to be helpful. Even though we're portrayed as being colonizers and oppressors, every country that we went to is much better off now than if we had never would have showed up.
That's right. It's exactly right. So even that whole story, you know, colonization, colonialism is evil and all that, that's such a lie, such a lie. But I did remember what I was going to say, that the Jews in Germany, many of the Jews in Germany, when Adolf Hitler was in power then and Judea declares war on Germany, the Jews in Germany, many of them, let's just call them the ordinary Jews, street-level Jews or whatever.
Street-level Jews. That's yeah. Brilliant, brilliant.
Yeah. Anyway, they a lot of them didn't like that. They objected to the fact that international Jewry, so Judea, declares war on Germany, because they knew that, uh-oh, we're having a very good life here right now, and that might change. Because they were being treated very well. They were having a very good life in Germany. And then, Judea declares war on Germany 6 weeks after Adolf Hitler gets to power. And, of course, Adolf Hitler was very, you know, he wrote Mein Kampf. He's very wide awake about what Jewry was doing to Germany, basically ruining Germany. They were in all these influential positions, just like they are now in our countries. All the political positions, all the media, all the, you know, influential positions, doctors and in universities. I mean, the universities have all been hijacked many years ago, you know. So, yeah, get the Jews out of these positions of influence utterly and completely, and then, you know, things can get better again. Things will change. But right now, you are right, we are in quite a predicament with the flooding of our countries. Like, these are the weapons that the Jews use against us, is to open the floodgates to all these people from, you know, the third world countries and whatnot. They are the weapon then to be used against us. And they don't like us very much.
Well, history tries to lay the responsibility of the anti-Semitism in Germany on that one man's shoulders. But we have to remember that whenever he ran for re-election, he had 98% of the vote. So he was very successful in exposing
Indeed.
The Jew, and the Germans are not stupid, and they saw what you know, he presented the evidence. So yet again, in today's society, we're seeing the same thing, but it's like 1,000 different voices speaking up all over the place, and our people are not stupid, and we're presenting the evidence, and they see it, and our narrative is man, just on that last show that I did last Saturday, it says that now over 50% of adult people in all of our white countries now are anti-Semitic. So we've definitely reached a tipping point. And no matter how hard they try to squish us, it seems to only help us.
Yeah, they are pushing their agenda at full speed because they know that they're running scared, actually, the Jews.
Well, that's why you're starting to see all of these laws passed. Even here in America, they're trying to pass anti-Semitism laws, which is a blatant violation of our First Amendment. So it's heating up. And when and
like Florida,
who was it? I think it was Ernst Zundel said that when they start to pass laws making it illegal to criticize Jews, that's the beginning of the end for the Jew. I believe that's who said that.
Well, I think it could be that he said it. I think somebody else had said it earlier. You know, many I think have said it, but that's exactly right. I think Ernst Zundel did say that. So passing a law forbidding you to dislike somebody else or to hate somebody else because they're, you know, they're beating up on you. Oh, well, now you're the criminal because you you don't like that. I mean, it's just so absurd, is it not? It's just absurd beyond belief that they would make a law making it illegal to not like somebody else.
Yeah, well, Thomas Massey went on Tucker Carlson's show probably a couple of months ago, and he caught a lot of flack for saying that not just the Democrats, but Republicans too, that every time he would approach one of the other representatives or senators in order to try to negotiate a topic, they would almost always say, well, let me get with my AIPAC guy and I'll get back to you. Yeah. So.
Yeah, Thomas Massey, he's fantastic. He's like one of the only ones, I think, in the United States that is really speaking about this.
If we make it peacefully to the end of Trump's term, I would love to see that man run for president.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good idea.
But that being said, I don't think we're going to make it through Trump's term peacefully. See, okay, the reason I say that is because leading up to this second Trump term, it looked like they were trying to get the right side of the political spectrum to lose their shit and start the Civil War so that they could point the finger at us saying, oh, look, you're the bad guy. You started this. But they were unsuccessful. We have patience and strategies, and we're calculating, and we're waiting for the right moment. And obviously the moment is not yet. So we have held our, or we've held peace. We're tugging at the leash, mind you, but we're still peaceful. So they've given up on us. And so they let Trump go back into office. And now he's passing all of these laws that are so upsetting to the far left that I think they're trying to make the far left rise up and start the Civil War, because they are desperate to have a civil war in America, because we are unconquerable. Even though we've been horribly mismanaged for decades, we're still head and shoulders the most powerful military might on the planet. So the only way they will be able to actually conquer America and institute this one world communist government that they want so bad is for us to beat the shit out of ourselves first.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. And don't think that outside forces are going to not capitalize on this chaos. When the Civil War begins in America, I promise you, you will see an invasion from China on our West Coast. That's why the last time Xi Jinping came to America, he didn't go to Washington, D.C., did he? He went to California, and he met with the California governor, and he went home. He never even went to D.C. at all. That's because they're organizing support for China over on in California. That's why there's so much communism. That's why they call it Commie-fornia.
Oh my goodness. Wow. Yeah, you've definitely...
When I told you it was going to get ugly, I was not exaggerating. But I think we'll be able to stop the Chinese at the Rocky Mountains. I don't think they'll be able to get much further into the heartland than that. But that being said, America is going to collapse and balkanize and break apart anyway. So be it.
Yeah. I think that the Chinese have a pretty big presence in Canada, too, you know.
And where is it? On your West Coast, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. They know what they're doing.
Hmm. Yeah.
Australia is in grave danger from China, too. Once America's civil conflict begins, we will not be able to respond to these global threats, and China is going to steamroll over Taiwan, and they're going to try to take Australia too, because they are in the expansionist phase of their empire. All empires go through phases, and China is currently in their growth and expansionist phase. So, and it won't be peaceful. They're going to conquer people as soon as they feel like they have the ability to do so.
And I would say that tell me what you think of this, but I think it's Jews also involved in that whole scenario, like in China, right? Like, just like
yes, Jews they were there when communism was first installed into China.
Yes,
you can do a search. That's an easy search to do.
Like the Sassoon family, and I think there were a number of these Jewish families that were right at Mao's side.
Yep, and they did the same thing in South Africa, in Cambodia, etc. Anytime you say the word communism, you might as well just say Jews. That's their baby. That's why that is form of government they want for their one world government, is communism, because you control the populace with an iron fist with communism.
In fact, the Jews themselves say that. There have been, you know, rabbis in high places. Was it Stephen Wise? I'm not sure which one of these rabbis said it. Judaism equals communism, and communism equals Judaism.
Absolutely. But you know that things evolve and progress over time, and the form of communism that's being practiced in China in today's society is not even the communism of the old guard Bolshevik types. It's more of a blend of corporatism, oligarchy, and communism. And it's more insidious and evil than the original version of communism was. So we have to fight against it. If we don't, if we're unsuccessful, the world is going to be thrown into oppression that it may never escape from, because technology is only going to make it easier and easier for them to control the populace, which is why the Jews have taken their pinnacle of power, which is the iron grip that they have on the world banking system, and used that unlimited money supply to buy out entire industries. Anything and everything that influences public opinion and perception, they control. Hollywood advertising. You can't even get a break when you're watching TV by a commercial because they own the advertising agencies too. Dude, they know what they're doing. They get better at it every generation.
And they also know us. Like, they are the psychologists and psychiatrists and the experts. They know us better than we know us in terms of, you know, psychology, and that's why they have had such a run with their war by deception.
The prime example, you know, of what you just said is how they're using our trusting altruism and helpfulness against us.
Yes. Exactly. I mean, it's quite a combination of qualities that we have that they have turned against us. So in combination with that altruism, we have the high trust and the high IQ. So the high trust, meaning that we are then gullible, you could say, to believing the lies that mm-hmm. they tell us. High trust served us very well when we were in homogenous societies, where we, you know, had to have communities in order to survive in harsh climates and whatnot, and that's how we could build up civilizations. Building a civilization
right.
is not an individual sport. It's a team sport, you know, like you have to work together.
The very traits that allowed us to create the greatest civilizations is ironically also our Achilles heel and is what is being used
yes.
against us at this point.
Very good way to put it, our Achilles heel. Exactly. So the Jews have weaponized these wonderful qualities that we have against us. But boy, oh boy, we also don't like to be made asses of. We don't, you know, our people are not... We do not like to be made the fool of and the ass of. So that is why this big awakening of our people, and when you say more than 50% of adults now.
Yeah, and that's all white countries. That is a global phenomenon. That's not specific to this country or that country. When you look at all the white countries around the world.
Yeah, our mm-hmm. people are saying, enough, okay. So if that translates to we're figuring it out. En masse, that the Jews, what they're doing, they're playing us like fools, and we don't do well with that.
Well,
on the whole,
our altruism is our Achilles heel, but we have other traits too. That's not our only trait, and some of our other traits are what keeps me from becoming too black-pilled about the upcoming struggles, because we have that same trust with in-group preference trust. And self-discipline and bravery and, you know, the ability to handle the chaos of war unlike any other race can. I feel like that once the conflicts do begin, a lot of these people that are on the fence just trying to say, well, I'm not racist, I'm just trying to get along, they're going to be forced to flock to our banners because they're going to be getting shot at because they're fucking white. So I feel like we're gonna win, but it's gonna come at a great cost, and I don't think that we're gonna be able to do much more than just defend our territory for a couple of generations, and true retribution is gonna have to fall upon future generations.
Well, well said, well put. You're right. We have these traits that will serve us well when push comes to shove, and that is going to unfold, I think, like you say, quite soon. And it won't take long for the rest of those fence sitters, like you say, to come to us. Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. And I also don't like to get black-pilled at all. And, you know, just while we're in this mode of, you know, like you said earlier, it's the time is not quite yet. So how do you live your life? Be healthy. Live it well. Shed the vices that you might have had or that, you know, like live in a healthy way and also live in a joyful way. And that's I mean, I just think it's really important that
you know, the one thing that keeps me from getting blackpilled better than anything else is cleaning my rifles and counting my ammunition.
Awesome. I love it. I love it. Okay, that's great. And yes, you know, I've if you were talking to me, let's say, okay, when did I start waking up? I started waking up in 2011, and then it was a process, right? It wasn't all overnight. Before that, oh, you would not have been able to stand me with the things that I was saying. I used to be so judgmental.
Yeah, it sounds like you were quite the hippie for a while.
I've never considered myself that, but I suppose I was. Like,
well, an environmentalist and stuff of that nature, you know, it sounds kind of hippie to me.
And you think, like, the thing is, if somebody listening say, what, you don't care about nature anymore? No, I care more than ever about life and beauty and, you know, that. But it's, I understand now that this whole environmentalist movement and, you know, the Green Party movement with that and all that has just been such a lie. And you know, I mean, let's just distill it down to this climate change lie. Carbon dioxide is bad. We are made of carbon. We are carbon-based life. When they say reduce your carbon footprint, they mean reduce you, yourself.
That's right. Well, our plant life requires carbon dioxide. That's what they eat. That's their source, sunlight. Exactly. And carbon dioxide. They keep the carbon, and they spit off the oxygen atoms back into the air and increases our oxygen, which we need oxygen. So reducing carbon dioxide in the atmosphere is to make it harder for our farms and plant life to grow properly. That's the whole point.
Exactly.
They don't give a fuck about the environment. They want our farms to struggle.
It's a weapon that they're a tool, shall we say, this carbon, you know, climate change agenda is a tool for them to be able to lock us all down and, you know, not use any of these resources that it's just their tool. One of the pandemic is one, and this climate change lie. And it's also frightening the children, the youth. They always have something to frighten the young people with. During my youth, it was the nuclear annihilation scare, and now it's this climate change thing, such that some young people sign pledges to never have children. I mean, if that's the pledge they're signing, well, then our enemy has won, and that's what we have to counter too. And that's another big thing, is that young people, please, you know, have families. You know, this is so important. If you don't have children, if we don't have babies, if we don't have children, well, then they've already won, right? But back to this thing that I was saying, if you had known my views earlier before I started waking up, one of the things that I was very sort of opinionated and judgmental about was the guns. And I used to be so judgmental of the Americans with their guns. And now it didn't take long for me to turn that one around. I say, I'm screaming from the rooftops, hang on to your guns. And I mean, in Canada, there's lots of guns too, you know, it's a nation of hunters and whatnot. And so we need to be armed. We need to hang on to our guns. But yeah, I used to be such a libtard. I was absolutely retarded with these kinds of things. Honestly, I'm not afraid to say it because, okay, I learned. That means other libtards, they can learn too. They just get their eyes open and learn the truth about what's going on. And so, you know, there's hope for retarded people like I used to be.
Well, look at Joel Davis. I mean, he's one of the most articulate voices we have right now in the pro-white community. And he was Antifa at one point.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. A lot of people don't know that, but he was. And look where he is now.
I'll have to look into him. See, I'm always delighted when I learn new names of people because it makes me realize
He's Thomas Sowell's, has become Thomas Sowell's right-hand man, who is...
Oh, good!
Yeah, he's the one that started the NSN organization. And they all just got mass banned off of X. Multiple people over there got arrested. They just arrested two of them again, like a day or two ago, because they showed up to some event where you honor the fallen soldiers from Australia, and they were wearing their NSN logo on a T-shirt, and they arrested him. Jim Roberts and Thomas Lutz are in custody right now because of that.
Australia is in really, really dire straits.
Yeah. Germany and England, I feel like, are the absolute worst when it comes to draconian activities against our people. But, yeah, they're not alone. Australia is really – and they're trying to push it here in America. We'll see.
Yes.
Hey, now, in regards to Canadian politics – it looks like Trudeau is on his way out. His popularity has absolutely plummeted. How do you feel about this guy, Poilievre, that supposedly...
Oh, Poilievre, he's...
Oh, Poilievre, excuse me.
He's as bad as them all. Poilievre, Pierre Poilievre, he's bad. He's worse.
Is there anyone that might run for prime minister that you feel good about at all?
Leslie Borey. No.
I've never heard that name before.
Leslie Borey, he was in jail for... for 23 months, just got out recently. He calls himself, you know, the only honest politician that he knows of anyway. He's run in many elections as an independent candidate, and of course he ended up in jail because he was trying to warn people about the Jews and the COVID and the bioweapon and all that stuff, and he ended up in jail. Anyway, so, you know, obviously he's not going to get elected. I don't think we're going to vote our way out of this, to be honest. I don't see us voting our way out because... democracy is a Jewish game. It's Jews speak for a country run by Jews. Ezra Pound said that, a great American poet. Ezra Pound said, democracy is Jew speak for country run by Jews. So if, you know, if we're sort of everybody, and Canada is the worst. I just actually watched an excellent video, a 20-minute video this morning from a guy who really explained the system in 20 minutes. And how Canada has this system, like very different from your system, and it absolutely is completely bogus. We actually, the whole thing, it runs on a deception. I can't explain it. I should send you the video later.
Please do. Right now. Please do.
Yeah, it's excellent. It was 19 and a half minutes, actually, this video, and he really explained it well.
Yeah, I would like to watch it and maybe critique it on one of my Saturday shows. And speaking of the Saturday show, it reminds me that this is actually a podcast, and we have a two-hour format. That's what I've always stuck to, and we're about 3 minutes away from the two-hour mark. So give me just a moment to speak to the audiences that are going to be watching it, the replay. Our guest today has been Monica Schaefer. You will see down in the description of the video different ways where you can follow her content. She has a Saturday podcast that she does herself. You're currently looking at her Twitter account. I have it pulled up. So follow her on Twitter. I would like to encourage you to be more active on Twitter while we have the ability to have free speech. So you guys that are watching the show Wednesday, don't forget to tune into my show on Saturdays starting at noon Central Time. It is a current event show presented from a pro-white perspective. I do it every Saturday, and I'm getting back into doing interviews such as this, and next week will be Zach Logos of the Logos Academy will be my guest next week. And with that being said, I'm not going to close the show, so continue to, you know, say whatever's on your mind, and I'm just going to stop recording. And we can hang out in the space and people can come up and talk to you if they so desire. But I don't want to cut you off since you have an audience. I think we've got, 20 or so people in here. Now, in order to close my podcast show, I always close it with those sacred 14 words. We must secure the existence of our people and a future for white children. And I will see you guys Saturday. Hello, my white brethren, and welcome to episode 100.